right, man. Welcome to Pro 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 673. Jason Lindgren is with me, and Rebecca, that will be how we refer to our guest, no last name, is a psychiatric nurse practitioner who has worked both in England and America. Welcome, Jason.
And a very fine and warm good morning.
You know, I wanted to mention, it's starting to warm up here, but the flowers are completely off. There's normally a clockwork of the bulbs, and they're the ones that come up the earliest have not shown themselves, basically the daffodils, but the tulips and the other two that come up first are all coming up together. So it's just a really, really strange time to be watching nature. But anyhow, let's get on with it. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you. Yeah, glad to be here. It's great.
Yeah, so glad to have you. Why don't you please explain a little bit about yourself to start with? If you want to lay down any contact info, you may do so.
Yeah, of course. Well, I won't take you too far back, but obviously, as you can tell from my accent, I'm not from these parts, but I started life over in England. And my journey into nursing started quite young when I was 16, and I had a car crash, and it was quite a bad one. I had multiple burns on my body, and obviously, they took me to hospital. And, you know, you're in hospital, you have all this technology and everybody's going around, the doctors, the nurses, the medications they give you. But it was one student nurse that put me back together. And I still remember her name now. She was incredible. She, back then we had to be in individual rooms in case of cross-contamination. And, you know, I was a 16-year-old girl. I was there on my own. I had burns to the most of the upper part of my body. So my body was kind of exposed and doctors are coming in and out. And she was amazing. She would come and she would eat her lunch with me so I wasn't on my own. And she would make sure I was covered up. And she looked after my mental health. And I just remember thinking this, I want to do this one day. I want to make somebody feel how she made me feel. And life took a different turn for me. When I left school, I didn't go straight into nursing. I did a big corporate job. And in England, you don't do nursing because it's a vocation. It's a National Health Service. So it's not particularly the best paid. And I went into the corporate world instead and had a great career down in London. And then in my early 30s, I found myself on my own, a single mom. I was going to be a stay-at-home mom, and that didn't work out. So I was like, well, I'm going to be a nurse. Let's do this. So I went to university, and I'd always wanted to do it. So I was really, really excited about going to university and becoming a nurse like that student nurse was. And pretty quickly, I realized that it wasn't the career I thought it was going to be the career. Now, this is some 20 years later. And I remember sitting back then, we did 50% in the classroom, 50% on the wards, on the floor in the hospital. And I was sat in the auditorium listening to the professor talk about nutrition and how important it was for wounds. And of course, my ears pricked up having been burnt. And the fact that I've always been interested in nutrition, holistic health, plants, herbs, it's just kind of in my nature. And they were explaining how important it was to have good nutrients, good nutrition, sunlight even, they were talking about, for wound health and for physical health. And then literally, I think it must have been 2 or 3 days later, I was on the ward. It was just a gen surge ward, so there was all sorts of different things going on. But we had people with wounds, and I remember sitting there and seeing this lunch being brought out. And because the lecture had been just a few days earlier, it was very fresh in my mind. And I looked at what we were giving them for lunch, which was a white piece of fish. So the fish, you know, fish is not bad. But then it was white mashed potatoes, a white sauce that went with it, and cauliflower. And it wasn't even made fresh, you know, it was probably powdered mash. And I did remember thinking a little bit of a disconnect here as to what I'm learning and to what I'm seeing. And that kind of carried on. There was many times that in the 3 years of my degree that I almost gave up because I just didn't see what that student nurse did for me all those years earlier, that wasn't nursing. And this is 20 years ago now. So I've been a nurse 20 years. And it was just very disillusioning. And it made me feel like maybe nursing wasn't the profession for me after all. But I'm not a quitter, so I finished it. And I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't particularly enjoy it. And then in my final year, as luck would have it, the last placement I was given was on an oncology surgical unit. So cancer surgical unit with lots of patients with mastectomies and hysterectomies due to cancer. And I fell in love with nursing. That's where I fell in love with nursing. I fell in love with the patients. The nurses were different. And it was more what I'd witnessed prior when that student nurse put me back together. There was a lot more empathy. The patients themselves were incredible. They were very stoic. Here they had been given a disease that could potentially take their life, and they were the most least complaining patients I'd ever taken care of. And also you got to know their families. It was just a very different way of nursing, and I decided that's what I wanted to do. So I left, I completed my studies, and I went straight into oncology, and I learned how to give chemo, and I was on the floor a little while, and then I ended up working in outpatients. And I really loved it. I liked the continuity of care. You got to know your patient. And contrary to popular belief, it isn't all doom and gloom. And this was in the UK. So I really enjoyed that part of nursing. I worked with some incredible oncologists, but it was all very much pharmaceutical related. And at this point, I started thinking, well, I would talk to my patients about nutrition. I couldn't help myself. I'd say, oh. And it wasn't part of my job. That's just the way I am, and exercise. And then, you know, life takes a different turn. And I ended up coming to America and falling in love. And then I became a nurse over here in America.
How big a difference is the nursing in the UK from your point of view from the nursing here? And by the way, were you a nurse practitioner out of the gate, or did you do that as you went along?
No, I've recently become a nurse practitioner. So we don't really have that in England. I think you can do it, but it's tied to your job. It's tied to the NHS. So you have to, I believe you have to be sponsored in that role to become like a nurse prescriber. But they don't have what we have. You have less autonomy in England as a nurse, in my opinion. And bearing in mind, it's 15 years, 16 years since I worked in the NHS. So things could be very different now. But over there, I mean, it's an NHS, so it's government run, so it's free. Well, it's not free. You do pay for it through your taxes, but there's no point of source payment. So that's when my eyes really opened, when I moved to America and I became a nurse here. First of all, I had to take this exam that I had no idea what it was, but that was fine. I took the exam and I went straight back into oncology. I got a great job at a very big oncology hospital. They had opened up a new one and I started working with them. And the first thing that's different is insurance. I mean, I didn't understand that. I didn't understand that somebody might not be able to afford healthcare, because that doesn't happen in England. If the government don't work out the contract with the pharmaceutical company, it's not even available in England. But there's very little that's not available in England that is available in America. It's just that you pay for it here. We don't pay for it there at the point of source. So that's the biggest difference, is the insurance.
Well, the whole game here is insurance. The entirety of the game is pharmaceuticals and insurance in terms of what can be done and what will happen.
And different prices. There'll be a price with an insurance if you actually look into it a bit. And then if you're saying, I don't have insurance, it could be $20,000 less for a couple of procedures and tests and things just because it's not being billed to the insurance.
Right, which will be getting worse with the onset of AI. In the same way, you're starting to be able to go into grocery stores where they're doing pilot programs. And depending who's on the aisle, the digital price is changing because of what they know about you. But one of the biggest things here is that doctors don't practice medicine for the most part. They don't make the decisions. The administration and the insurance and other people do it. And it's pretty much a pharmaceutical game at this point. Much of it is a pharmaceutical game.
Yeah, and I would say that's the same way in the UK. You just don't see it as easily as you see it in the US. I also worked as a healthcare assistant in a hospital in New Zealand. This is many, many years ago. It's similar. It's the same all over. I think in America, you see it more because you pay at your source. I mean, I didn't understand that you have to pay for insurance every month. And then you still have to pay when you have a procedure.
Right.
And you don't ever know how much that is. It's like going into a restaurant and having no prices on the menu. You wouldn't do it, would you?
No, it's exactly like that. And there are many clips coming up on YouTube and other places where people demanded their bill and saw things like a soda was $20, a tongue depressor, a flat piece of wood was $15, $20, $30, things like this.
Well, yeah, and to that point, the one thing that really stands out to me, and I'll never forget it, is when I first came here, I wanted Zavorex. It's a little cream. Sometimes if you get little sores on your lips, and Zavorex, it's a cyclovir. I don't use many pharmaceuticals, but that really works. And I went to buy it at the chemist here in at the pharmacy here in America, and they said, oh, that's prescription only, which, okay, because in England, you can just go buy it. You don't, it doesn't even have to come from a chemist. You can buy it in the store. So the doctor I was working with at the time said, that's okay. I'll prescribe it for you. And I had insurance through the hospital. And when I went down to the pharmacy and gave my prescription in, it was going to cost me $745 with insurance. That same tube that is made by the same company in England, I was over there not that long ago and I bought one and it was £5, so $7.
And what you're pointing out here is exactly why we are where we are in the world. We're heading into a new era because of how drastic the example you just made is across the board in almost all fields. But I want to take a second to describe to people why being a nurse practitioner is kind of a big deal. In my family, I have a male nurse practitioner who's up in the northern states, and he serves in a small town. He's kind of the family doctor. They're not exactly a doctor, but many nurse practitioners that are in small towns, they kind of, in a weird way, act like the town doctor. I mean, in a lot of ways. And I think we should point that out to people just so they know the level at which we're talking.
Yeah, I think nurse practitioners are very much, they're quite holistic in their approach. As a nurse, you know, I was Western medicine trained, and that's why I wanted to give you a little bit of a background because I was trained in England, but then I've worked for 15 years, 14 years here in the States, and I've done my master's in the States, and I became a nurse practitioner in the States. And even though it's Western medicine, that still has value. You know, a lot of people who think holistically and want to do integrative medicine kind of sometimes say that, oh, you know, Western medicine is all pharmaceutical drugs. It isn't. I mean, it is a lot of that, but it still has value because when you, as a nurse, I always say nurses stop the doctors from killing you. A nurse will see something before a doctor does. And I've worked with some fantastic doctors and I am not being disparaging to them. You know, there's good and bad everywhere. But I think a nurse will look at things holistically. A nurse will think to talk to the family. And they do critically think, and they are a little bit outside the box. Now, I have never been to medical school, so I can't speak to that, but I do have family members who have been to medical school, and I also have friends who've been to medical school, and they feel like they are just taught to prescribe. And in my nurse practitioner degree that wasn't that long ago, a lot of it is about prescribing. But that doesn't mean to say that that doesn't have value either. And me as a licensed clinician and with integrity, my aim is to look outside of that. I think that's what we have to do. Yeah, you know, Western medicine has its place. If you have a car accident and you need an ambulance and your leg's hanging off, you don't want somebody doing acupuncture. You go to the ER and they put you back together. But healing starts somewhere else. It doesn't happen there. It's the same with diagnostics. Western medicine definitely has its place for diagnostics. What you do after that, you don't have to stay in the Western medicine. And that's how I ended up being a nurse practitioner, because when I came to this country, I saw very quickly how things are different. And there was a little bit of the holisticness, that element seemed to be missing. And even though, like I say, I work with some great doctors and nurses, everybody's kind of just working in their silo. And there is some indoctrination. There's no denying it. That's what happens. If you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. I was an oncology nurse. So if any of my friends would say to me, oh, can you look at this? I'd say, you don't want me to look at it, because I'm going to say, get that checked out, because everything to me was about cancer. An ER nurse will look at it that way. But you still have to look at everything holistically. And that's what's missing. The body is a whole. Interestingly, as a psychiatric nurse practitioner, I'm an integrative psychiatric nurse practitioner. So I'm not going to just prescribe a medication and I'll see you in 3 months. We're going to find out why you're depressed. I'm going to look at your labs. I'm going to look at your lifestyle. We're going to look at trauma. We're going to look at the whole picture. Interestingly, gut health. Gut health is huge for mental health. Interestingly, though, under my scope of practice in the state I practice, if I recognize that my patient's depression stems from a gut issue, as a psychiatric nurse practitioner, it would be out of my scope of practice to treat them. I would then have to send them to a referral to a family nurse practitioner or a doctor or a GI or something to treat them, which to me is insane. The whole body is, it's all one.
So we've got to talk about this for a minute. There's so many things that you just covered that I want to get into, but what you're hitting on, I'm seeing everywhere. And by the way, I'm noticing that so many nurse practitioners are going towards holistic ideas, natural ideas, because they're recognizing that the healing is missing. Early on, you described the food where you were being trained, and I was sitting here smiling. I spent time in Korea and learned many things about that ancient culture. One of the things is their diet, the way they eat is put together, so there's color codes. And if you have all the colors of food, you know you're getting a complete meal. If you look at the very old Chinese medicine, nutrition is a massive part of it. And what I see is so many of the people in your field who are interested in actually healing, which is pretty much absent. For the most part, like you said, you break an arm, you really want a Western ER. You need a surgery, you really want a Western ER. But after the fact, and here's the example, about a year ago, I broke my ankle. I went into the ER, they put me back together. But as I was getting ready to go, they handed me a slip saying, you need to go to a surgeon. And so I took the slip. And I already knew the game because I talked to four other people within the past year who had broken their ankle. Each one of them was referred to a surgeon. Three of them got screws and plates in their ankle. Every one of them, after a year and all kinds of issues, had all the stuff they put into their ankle pulled out. So when I walked away, I'd already learned that. And I said, if I can't walk, maybe I'll go see the surgeon, but I could walk. It healed up. My point here is the gap you're starting to fill is the recognition that healing is absent from the pharmaceutical model.
100%. And that's very well said. The healing is definitely absent from that model. And healing is inside all of us. We all have the ability to heal.
Self-heal.
Well, I do a thing. If you close your eyes and I ask you to point to yourself, everyone just close your eyes and point to yourself and then open your eyes and look at where you're pointing. You're pointing to you. And actually, probably 99% of the time, people point to their heart. They don't, when you're talking about yourself, you don't point to your doctor or to your spouse. It's within you. You know, your own body knows how to heal. And that is very much missing from the Western model. Because, and the Western model is just a model. It's a model of care. We've got Chinese model of care. We've got Ayurveda model of care. We've got Western model of care. And it doesn't have to be either or. Like you say, you know, you went to the ER and they did what they had to do, and then you move on. But you can heal it with nutrition, with being outside in nature, positive thinking. I mean, I sometimes roll my eyes at positive thinking. I mean, it's a little bit more than positive thinking. But when I was working as an oncology nurse, I saw people coming into the clinic, same disease, same stage, same treatment, similar age. Yeah, okay, there's no genetics because they're not related. And some would have better outcomes than the other. And I would think, what is that? Is it that they're having a better lifestyle? Is it that they're exercising? And every single time people that have a better outcome, it's their positive mental attitude. And that's more than positive thinking, for sure. But also there's a lot of fear-mongering in Western medicine. I mean, the very diagnosis of cancer is incredibly fearful.
And a death sentence, often. What you're getting into right now ties exactly into the social engineering, where everybody knows that if they go to a new movie or they watch the news, that undercurrent of fear is going to be there. And what you just described was a happy person having a better healing outcome than a person who's not that happy. And this goes back to the old maxims from the East: mind precedes all. That's one to one. In the 1400s, there was a very famous alchemist named Paracelsus. He's got a quote that basically says, if you burn or cut because of a cancer, you should be charged with a crime because the body heals itself. And this is really the turning point, what you're describing now, because you begin to recognize maybe 50% of the importance, you know, maybe 50% of your curing could be attributed to this. You're recognizing that the current way we do medicine in the West, it's absent. It's completely missing. And people like you are bringing these ideas back to the table.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people now that are really waking up to it. A lot of licensed clinicians that are choosing to do something different. And that can only be a good thing. And in psychiatry, it's called integrative psychiatry. And sometimes maybe a pharmaceutical drug is needed, but that shouldn't be, that isn't the fix. Nobody is Prozac deficient. You know, no.
That's another old alchemy saying. An old alchemy saying says, in order to heal the body, you must give it either the building blocks or something that the body is made of for that to occur. Basically, they're saying it's nutrition. But I want to try something here with you just to make a point. If I came to you and I said, I have terrible, terrible arthritis in my hands to the point where it's starting to affect my ability to work and type, what would be the Western response to that problem, do you think?
Well, bearing in mind I'm psychiatry, so you wouldn't be coming to me, but in general terms, they would put you on some kind of pharmaceutical for sure.
And that pharmaceutical, would it be aimed at healing or reducing the symptom, which is pain and swelling?
No, it absolutely would be reducing pain and swelling. So they'd give you some kind of anti-inflammatory, maybe some steroids, maybe some injections. And don't quote me on that. That's not my realm. But it would be definitely, it would be treating the symptoms. And that's what Western medicine does. And that's why emergency medicine is fantastic, because it's treating, it's stopping you from dying. It's patching the wound up and then sending you on your way, and then healing happens somewhere else.
Well, I brought this up for a specific reason, because before we came on the air, you and I were talking about DMSO and iodine. Mm-hmm. So early on, when I started interviewing people, I kept meeting people who are headed in the direction you're headed. Where's the healing? We've got to have healing. This isn't real medicine if there isn't healing. And I learned about DMSO and I learned about iodine. The person I described with the arthritis was me. I had two things wrong. I had received somewhere between 15 and 20 shots in the Marine Corps, and I had tremors. Basically, I had Parkinson's. It got so bad when my mother was dying that I couldn't write a check. That's how bad it had gotten. Then I started to get arthritis in my hands. I learned to take DMSO and 50-50 it with Lugol's iodine. And just for people listening, if you're going to use DMSO, you've got to know the safety of it because it pulls anything you touch into your body. But when you do it, it heats up. And I applied this to my hands. As we speak now, having learned from Recoweg remedies, that it's just drops of stuff you put under your tongue, there's nothing in the Recoweg bottles except a vibration. With the Recoweg and with the DMSO iodine, I'm healed. I don't have arthritis anymore. And just to put a fine point on it, the Parkinson's was cured with basically Recoweg and Recoweg-like remedies, where there's literally no chemical component in the bottle. It's the vibration of most times a plant. And the reason I brought this up is because you and I had the discussion about DMSO and iodine, and there's a real world example. And I'm not suggesting people treat themselves this way. I'm simply explaining to you what I chose to do.
And what's fabulous about that is that we had that conversation. I've written those down, and now I'm going to go and I'm going to research that for me, because if that's something I can bring to my patients, I don't know if that would work because I'm on a psychiatric level. But I also have friends that are NPs, that are holistic NPs, FMPs, and doctors. And if it's something, I've learned that from you, if I can then take that to my team, my sort of community, then they could then use it. That's how it spreads, right? That's how we learn about these things.
That's right.
Like you said, not everybody should go out and just use it.
There's basically four things that I know beyond the shadow of doubt. From Fortune, I learned that almost everything can be cured, and that the way you think and the way you are, whether you're a happy person, is roughly 50% of how your health's going to turn out. The next thing is that diet is everything. You want to heal and you've got a terrible diet, you're probably not going to do very well. The third thing is Recoweg. These are little tiny bottles. There were two genius brothers that didn't get along. One wrote, one formulated. And these little remedies used to be commonplace in medicine before the Rockefellerization in 1900s. The biggest thing is Recoweg exists and you can buy it on Amazon. And lastly, DMSO and iodine. Those are the four biggest health changers that I've learned in all my time doing this.
Well, Recoweg, if I'm correct, is homeopathy, isn't it? It's a version of homeopathy. And what homeopathy is it's just the smallest. They give you the problem for the ailment, and it's diluted as if it was one drop in the Pacific Ocean. It's so diluted, like you say, it becomes a vibration. But then that enables your own body to build up an immunity to whatever is going on and then help you heal.
And it works. And what's craziest about it is, like, Fortune would make little remedies. Some of them would be combined Recoweg's. Some of them would be things that he made and added to the Recoweg because he's a holistic doctor trained. But I would get down to, just the last seventh or eighth of the bottle, and I'd be all bummed saying, Fortune, this done. He says, I'm going to teach you how to make it last forever. So he taught me how to do the dilution. The rule of holistic dilution is 1:9. And when he first began saying this, I was saying, but Fortune, you sent me this bottle and it was full potency, and now I'm diluting it down, so I'm losing its efficacy. And he said, contraire, mon frere, it's the exact opposite. He said, each time you dilute it down, the potency goes up, or maybe potency isn't the right word. Yeah, right. And I found it to be true. So every bottle of Recoweg that I get and everything that was ever sent to me, I have them in my own little medical cabinet forever because I know how to dilute.
Yeah, 9 is a sacred number too. So that doesn't surprise me that he had you do it down to 9. But the homeopathy was before 1911, before the Rockefellers changed it, homeopathy was that was the rule. I mean, the royal family still use homeopathy.
And astrology. They all use homeopathy and astrology.
And astrology, right. So there's got to be something in it. Homeopathy, I mean, for so many different things, for menopausal symptoms, for depression, for some psychiatry issues, homeopathy is fantastic. But what we do, what I am very mindful of as well is that there are some things you can't nutrition your way out of. If you are lying in bed and you are extremely depressed and you can't get out of bed, me saying to you, just get out and see the sunrise every morning is not enough. Sometimes we need to give people a bridge so that they can then change their lifestyle. And that's where sometimes pharmaceutical, I mean, as a nurse practitioner, I do prescribe, but what I don't prescribe is a drug and then see you later. And then 3 months later, oh, now I'm going to give you another drug for the side effects of that drug. That doesn't happen with me, but that's what happens in Western medicine. But like you said, there are a lot of people now really seeing the deficit of the healing. And also, I think we need to understand that healing is a very individual concept. I mean, the pharmaceutical company is the most genius business plan. The medical care, I call it a sick care industry.
One size fits all, too.
And that's just not true. But it's a brilliant business model, isn't it? Because we can give all these people the same drug, some will get side effects, and then we can give them different drugs, so we'll make more money there, and then they'll be on them forever, and nobody gets better. My model of care is it's a healthcare. I want to empower my patients. I mean, I said this to you before and I will stand by it. If I have a patient and I'm still working with you in 2 years' time, we would then have a conversation that maybe I'm not the right practitioner for you. Because if you're still doing the same thing and taking the same drugs, no, I mean, there are some exceptions. There are some exceptions where medication is needed. But even if you change your lifestyle and if you work with someone who really understands that and understands trauma and where the root cause of the psychiatric illness is coming from, then you don't have to be on medications long term, or you can maybe only be on one medication, and that medication may be much more efficient because your body is now absorbing it properly or it's working properly. But what you see in psychiatry, it's the only modality where you just give a drug based on your symptoms. Like if you went to a cardiologist and said, oh, you know, I get out of breath and my heart's fluttering. They don't just put you on a medication straight away. They do some tests. Then they put you on medication, usually. In psychiatry, someone comes into your office and they're weepy and they're crying and they just go, okay, here's some medication. They very rarely asked about what's your home life like, what's your diet like, what's your exercise like, how much time do you sit in front of a screen, how much time are you in nature, you know, when do you eat, what are you eating, what's your relationship like with your child? I mean, there's 100 different things we can ask, and some do ask that. Also labs, you know, labs should be absolutely the first thing that you do in psychiatry. You know, is somebody vitamin D deficient? Are they magnesium deficient? Usually everybody's magnesium deficient because we don't have it in our soil anymore. You know, and these mineral and trace minerals can mimic psychiatric illnesses. There is a connection now between celiac disease and schizophrenia. And I'm just starting to research that. I mean, one step at a time, right?
Don't the labs really indicate how it's absolutely not one size fits all? And I want to say this about the homeopathy too, because there really is no magic bullet. You have to discover what works and you have to discover what works for you. And the easiest way I can illustrate this is years ago when I got into sun gazing, I was amazed at the results of it. Like my vision actually got better. I've got astigmatism in one of my eyes. And sun gaze, you're not supposed to be able to cure astigmatism without surgery. And it was curing my eyes. But I had a friend who has a lot of freckles on their body and red hair. They cannot go out in the sun and do what I did. They don't have the same body type or reaction to the sun. And so when I began to realize, hey, I can deal with my own arthritis, I can fix this, my wife got interested. But what I learned very quickly is I need magnesium. I need it almost like oxygen. I needed iodine. I needed a bunch of things, but I needed it at a much different rate than my wife needed it. And this really underscores what you're pointing out, because when you do a lab, you're literally looking at what's there for that individual and not treating as one size fits all.
There is a saying, if you're not testing, you're guessing. And I agree with that to a certain extent. But then also, so I just want to go back to your point about homeopathy. What is amazing with homeopathy is it either works or it doesn't. It doesn't give you nasty side effects. So if you want to work with somebody who understands homeopathy, they will, based on your symptoms, and it's a very in-depth sort of intake. I have a little bit of training in homeopathy, but I'm not licensed or clinical, you know, licensed in that. But they will do a very, very intense intake. And then based on your symptoms, and this goes back hundreds and hundreds of years, they will give you their recommendation. And if within so many, you know, if it doesn't work within so many days, then they switch it to something else. But what that homeopathy isn't doing isn't giving you a lot of nasty side effects. So that is a really good thing about the homeopathy, you know. And I also think the business model with functional medicine, the testing is important, but functional medicine, unfortunately, has also gone a little bit. It's a little bit Western medicine to a certain extent. You go to a functional medicine doctor or nurse practitioner or practitioner, and it can be quite expensive just for the consultation. It's not covered by insurance, which is not a bad thing, but it can be quite expensive. And then they'll say, oh, you need this lab, this lab, this lab. And it can be $500 for the labs. And then they sell you a bunch of supplements that are probably made by the same pharmaceutical company. So in my opinion, in some instances, functional medicine is not much better than Western medicine. But here's what happens. People want a business model. And if I was to see a few patients a day, the way I do it, I can only see about 3 or 4 patients a day because I take so much time. It takes a lot of time and I give people my attention. That's not a great business model for Western medicine, right? And even for the functional medicine doctors, they want to make more money. So then what they do is they send out a course and they'll put out a course. So now they can reach more people. And that's great. It's not a bad business model. But you're still not giving individual care. And what works for one person, like you just said about the sun, if someone's ginger, you know, red hair and freckles, they can't go out in the sun like you can, but they can still go out in the sun. There is a way to do it. It's very easy. You put a hat on, you sit in the shade. You will still get the sun's ray. You still get it. You just don't get it directly. You don't need to be actually sat in the sun. And the sun is what God gave us to heal us. The sun is not to be feared. And this is kind of where I'm trying to, you know, I'm finding my niche. The way I run my practice today, it might be very different in 12 months. And I'm not adverse to courses. I think they have the time and a place. But if you're sick, if you're not well, if you can't get out of bed in the morning because you're depressed, how on earth are you expected to do a self-paced course that's just cost you $3,000 or whatever? So to me, that's not the answer either. We have to, as licensed clinicians, and I'm talking about licensed professionals, the NPs, the nurses, the doctors, those that are interested in holistic medicine. I have friends that have turned their back completely on Western medicine, and they now just do integrative or functional medicine. But I kind of feel like they're missing the point too. So I don't know what the answer is. I'm not going to pretend I do, but I'm trying to find a balance. And my biggest thing that I want to get across to people is the fear, to not be fearful. I have some clients that come to me in the past when I was doing coaching, and they're like, you know, I've got this, and I'm like, okay, we need to get that diagnosed, and they will not go to Western medicine because they're so scared of it. That's not healthy either, because now we might be missing something. You need to, in some ways, you need to get diagnosed, and then we know what we're dealing with, and then we can treat it with all these, there's so many different tools out there. I mean, it would be a 5-hour episode for me to tell you all the things that we could do, so.
As a person who can prescribe, how concerned are you? How can I frame this up? Like, I'm sure you've seen the television ads for drugs where A recent one that I saw while I was in a store, the TV was playing and a drug ad came on. I think the drug was for like eczema or some skin problem. Maybe it wasn't eczema, but they have to list the side effects to some degree. They actually openly listed liver damage. They listed death on a recent one we saw, risk of death. As a prescriber, how concerned does that make you? Do you research all the drugs to find out the severity of the side effects?
Yes, and the pharmaceutical companies do put the side effects in with the drug, and they have black box warnings, and antidepressants cause depression. Antidepressants increase suicide ideation.
Why is that? I have always wondered about that.
Well, because if one person in the trial started having more suicidal thoughts, then they have to list it. And these medicines work on the neurotransmitters. Each different psychiatric drug works on different neurotransmitters, and there's so many different things. So when you're messing around with those things, then it can cause, it can cause the very things that you're trying to help. But what a lot of psychiatrists and nurse practitioners or providers that do prescribe, what they don't say is they don't really tell people that. They will go over the side effects, don't get me wrong, but they don't tell them about the black box warning. And I do, or I will, because my practice isn't actually completely up and running at the moment as it stands. I will tell people about the side effects. You know, if you want to take an antidepressant, that's fine, but here's the list of what potentially can happen. It doesn't happen to everybody. But what you see in psychiatry is people will get that antidepressants cause insomnia. Because when you're messing with different neurotransmitters, then it creates a different environment in your brain.
And there's add-on commercials now.
So
now they show the guy with the sign that's supposed to have a happy face, but it's still sad. So they have another drug that you're supposed to pile on the first one they gave you.
Yeah, or it works for a limited amount of time. I mean, in some of these drugs, and I don't have statistics in front of me, so I'm really just going to say this blanket. But in a lot of clinical trials with antidepressants, the placebo doesn't fare much worse than the antidepressant drug. Like I say, I don't have statistics in front of me, but that's well known, is that a placebo is sometimes just as good as the anti. I mean, it takes 4 to 6 weeks sometimes for an antidepressant to start working. For some people get side effects, some people don't. So, you know, I think if you've got someone who can't get out of bed, or they are suicidal, or they're in a really bad way, and they come into your office and you're like, okay, take this, you're going to feel better in 4 to 6 weeks. But chemically, they might not start feeling better, but psychologically they start feeling better because they've been given something. But what I try to do is I give them my time, and we look at what is going on. I mean, some people do genuinely just want the pill, and if that's what they want, then I'm not here to say that's not right, because for that person, it may be what they need, but it's not the root cause.
Well, I've got to ask, some of the commercials, or many of them now, really turn the medical practice on its head by saying, look, here's a drug, ask your doctor if it's good for you, instead of the doctor examining you, figuring out what the problem is and prescribing something. They're directing the patient to walk in and say, I want this drug. Do you ever not prescribe drugs because you've read the side effects?
Not at this time. I mean, what I would do is look at the individual, and if they come to me and say, I've seen this on the TV, right, if that's what you're saying, then we would have a discussion, and I would make sure that they know all. The first thing you're taught in nursing school is informed consent. Western medicine does not give informed consent, because it doesn't tell you about anything other than what they're prescribing. To me, that's not informed consent. They don't also tell you the long laundry list of side effects that could happen. So what I would do is, if somebody came to me with a certain drug, is I would discuss it with them. I would take the time to talk to them about it. This is what it could do for you. And obviously, I'm going to know that patient. So, and I'll have their labs, and I would look at it, and I would know their mindset. So that comes into play too.
That's a big deal. That is a big deal. My mother had a doctor for 20 years, the local small town doctor, and she went in saying, my nose gets plugged at night. She gave her one of those spray up the nose things. My mother lost her sense of smell entirely. And I came out to take care of her and I found out about this. And so I said, no, we're going in and we're going to ask the doctor what the heck. And the doctor's response was, well, didn't you read the fine print to my almost 90-year-old mother?
And nobody, I don't read the fine print. You know, if it's for me, I mean, I do when it comes to research. And that's the thing about the research too. You know, you get people saying, well, the research says, well, look at the research. Look at those clinical trials. First of all, who funded it? That's my very first question. Second of all, who is the population that they, and you could have 100 people in a clinical study and they all react a similar way, but then you'll always have outliers because those people that do really well in a clinical trial, they might be going home and their diet might be much better than the next person, or they might be going out getting morning sunlight, being out in nature. The clinical trial doesn't take that into consideration. And also, for every clinical trial, you can find me on something that says something works, I can probably find you another 5 or 6 papers somewhere that says it doesn't. So you really, I mean, research definitely has its place. I love research. I'm very into it. And I'm not kind of saying that research is biased all the time, but you do have to look. People do manipulate, not necessarily manipulate the data, but they market things. I see a lot of it now on Instagram with influencers, wellness influencers that are not trained clinical providers. And people might say, well, you know, Western medicine, I'm not interested in that. But like I say, I'm Western medicine trained. I have 20 years nursing experience before that as a care assistant. I have a lot of experience that you can't teach that. It's something you can't teach. And also I know Western medicine. I know the system. It's like knowing the beast inside out and then working with it, because it doesn't have to be either or. And what I'm seeing a lot on the internet is that people will say, well, this study shows this, and it may well do. But when you actually look at the research, the population was like 5 people, or and you just have to do your due diligence, I think.
So let me jump in. We're coming to the top of the hour, but in the case of my mother losing her smell, if that doctor would have conducted herself like you do, that might not have happened. As a matter of fact, I would have to ask if every doctor did that to make sure they were informed about that. I wonder what that would do to drug sales. But we are coming up to the top of the hour. Jason, is there anything more you want to get into hour one?
For hour two, I'd like to hear what the differences in psychiatric medicine are in the UK compared to the USA, because I'm going to guess that there are differences.
Yeah, we can open hour two with that. And also, I probably want to mention again that clip that's been making its rounds about all the psychiatrists that were pulled over and asked a simple question going into a convention or something. Is there anything more you'd like to add to the tail end of hour one, Rebecca?
No, I don't think so. I think we covered a lot. And I like to talk, so now would be a good time to speak.
You're a good speaker. That's a plus. But we're going to wrap up hour one. Hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crow777radio.com. Members know to log in to get the full 2-hour episode. Members get access to Shoot the Moon, which is a 2-hour film Jason and I put together on my telescope work. It has 10 awards in the world. The last 2 came from India. Members get access to all the forums, where it is completely different than social media because everyone is polite there. Makes a big difference. Also, comment sections. And lastly, membership gets exclusive access to my solar work. It is my point of view that the sun is in lockstep with the era change. And as I pick up filming again this season, I'm very excited, hoping that we might get some astounding video. We'll just have to wait and see. With that, we're going to take a short break, come back for hour one, and I hope to see you all logged in as members. I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. We'll see you shortly. There it is, man. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.